contract. Get her done. My name's Jimmy and I'm an alcoholic. And I am very grateful to be here tonight. I'm very grateful to be here and look out there and I see a lot of my friends. You know? This program has granted me that. A lot of good friendships. I mean real friendships. You know, people really care in these rooms. They really do. I've got 5.5 years this month. And I'll tell you something. If you had told me 5.5 years ago that I was going to be a speaker at a meeting, I'd have told you you're crazy, just like I was telling everybody else when I was at Pine. Yeah. You're fired. My story is just like everybody else's, pretty much. I started drinking when I was a kid. I didn't like the taste, but I sure did like the feeling, you know. It made me feel, and it made me become who and what I wanted to be. I can remember when I was a little kid, we stole some beer from a wedding reception that was happening down the street from my house, and I can remember we were drinking them beers, and man, we were getting a buzz, and I mean, we felt like men, boy, and I was every bit of 11 years old, you know. And I mean, it was cool, you know, that we're smoking cigarettes and just, you know, ever since I found that, and maybe even sometime before that, I always liked doing stuff like that, and I like breaking the law. I like being on the other side of the law. That was my vision of a hero was, I met this dude, when we lived in Canoga Park. And this guy, he used to come to the house next door. They used to build motorcycle parks and stuff. His name was Gary Bang, okay? And he rode a Harley and everything else. And he was pretty much a bad dude back then, you know, and there was a bunch of other bad dudes that hung out over there. And I remember this guy came down the street just hauling and in his car, and he was trying to run us over on our bikes, and because we used to give this guy a bad time around the corner when we were kids and stuff, and he used to scare the crap out of us. And I remember he did that, and Gary went over to his house and got him and made him walk all the way down the street and apologize to all the neighbors for doing that. And I thought, man, that guy's bad, you know. And I told my mom, you know, he's not, you know, you see what he did, you know, he was a great dude, you know. Anyway, after that, I had justified that being an outlaw, what it was like, you know. And I justified it in my head that it was okay to do that, you know. So from then on, I was an outlaw. We had what's called a wash behind our house, and man, we would go to Thrifty's and we'd steal bottles of booze or cigarettes, whatever we could do, and we went down to the wash, and that's where we did it. And incidentally, the wash would be equivalent to the St. John's River, except it was concrete. Back in them days, I even tried some other forms of alcohol. Not a bunch, but a little bit. And I pretty much liked anything that gave me a buzz, you know. Because I wasn't happy with who I was. I look back today, and I always felt inferior, man. I never felt right. If somebody put me out on Front Street or tried to call me up to a stage to talk or to speak or be in a play when I was a kid, I would freak out, man. I mean, I just couldn't do it. And when I discovered alcohol, I was allowed to do those things. And not only do them, but do them to what, in my mind, was great. So we moved up here when I was about 12. And 12 years old, and up here it was different. Down south, I used to like to get in a lot of fights and get in a lot of trouble and stuff, so I pretty much could take care of myself. And I don't remember too many things in sixth grade, but I remember one thing. The first week of sixth grade up here, I got my butt kicked 3 times, man. You guys are tough up here. So, yeah, my cousins used to ask me, what's them farm boys like up there? I said, you don't want to know. So anyway, as soon as I got up here, I immediately seeked out the kids that got in trouble and stuff, and those were my buddies. Some of them are still my friends today. And incidentally, that's what I wanted to be, you know. I never had trouble doing schoolwork. I had trouble just getting it done because I didn't like to do it, you know. I've been lucky. I can read and write very good. I could do good in school when I wanted to, but I just didn't want to, you know. Anyway, I went through sixth grade and seventh grade, and my neighbor was a couple years older than me, and he was just like me too, you know. He liked to drink, liked to fight, and liked to run around and cause trouble and stuff. And anyhow, he was a grade ahead of me, and he got his driver's license before I did, because I was the guy that was the young one. I graduated high school when I was 17, so everybody had their license and was writing their own notes and stuff in high school, and I couldn't do any of that stuff, so I just ran away from home. But at any rate, this guy he got his license before I did, but it was weird because it was almost like I could drive better than he did, because we'd go out, and I would be the one to drive home. Even though I was drinking, I would still drive home because I somehow managed to get the truck back to our house. And at any rate, back in those days, it didn't matter how old you were or what. You could buy alcohol. There was a place we had out in the country that we could go to, and it was over there on the corner of 328 and Old Dunyava Highway. We called it the Arab Market. And that guy would—you just go in there and tell him a joke, and he'd tell you whatever you wanted, you know. He didn't care. And if he thought the cops were outside or watching, he'd put it in a trash can for you, you know. But we always found ways to get it, you know. And all the way through high school, I found myself actually through junior high and high school, I found myself wanting to do every form of alcohol there was out there. I might be what you call, I don't want to say a modern-day alcoholic, but I have tried every form of alcohol there is, pretty much. And I pretty much like any form that gets me there. And I remember there was a few times back when I was a teenager that I did black out. I wasn't really I don't think I was a binge drinker, but I drank every chance I got. But I just didn't seem to get enough chances that kept me from getting an education, I guess, because although I didn't get to graduate high school with my class, I had to graduate 4 months later because I had to go to adult school because stupid me decided I wasn't going to do any homework my senior year, and I just ran wild and had fun, you know, and the end result was I didn't get to graduate with my class, and that was kind of a resentment for me all through my life up to this point. And after I got out of high school, my senior year, I got kicked out of my house. I moved in with a buddy, and my buddy's parents let him do whatever he wanted to, so it was a great place for me. And that's what we did, boy. We partied and down at the river all the time, and they used to have what they called foggy day schedules around here, and foggy day schedule, man, it was time to party, boy. Never mind going to school, because that's unsafe, but you can get a bunch of your buddies together, go drive around the countryside over a case of beer. That's no problem, you know. That's how we used to do it. And pretty much that's the way I was all the way through high school. And then after I got out of high school, I had to get a job. And my parents actually tried a little, like, an intervention thing on me. And they made me move back home, which I was 17 at the time, so I had to. So I moved back home, and I kind of followed their rules, although I didn't follow them 100%, but I didn't get caught to a point anyway until I got kicked out again. But the bottom line is getting drunk and running around with my buddies was more important than having a place to live, you know? So at that point, I didn't care. And I got kicked out of there again, and I moved down the street with another friend of mine whose parents didn't care what we did. And there was probably about, including the three kids, there was another four of us that lived in that house. And it was just a flop house, man. I mean, they were great people, but they just, we did whatever we wanted to do, you know. And there again, I had, door was open and it, party was on. So I had to find a job and I had to start paying room and board. So my friend told me about these people that had a walnut harvesting outfit, and I knew these people, man. They were beer drinking fools, and that's where I wanted to be. So I went to work for them, and there again, that was it seemed like all my jobs were gauged on what they did, the activities after work, you know. Like, what time was beer 30, you know? I didn't want to go to work where we just went to work and then after work we went home. I mean, who wants to do that, man? I'm single. I don't have no family. I just want to party all the time. So, and that's what we did. And it seemed like as time went on, I got into trouble with the law. I used to like to go out on Mooney and get really drunk and fight people. And I got somebody tried to sue me one time. I've been in jail for assault and battery, public intoxication, a lot of stuff like that, just little piddly things, you know. I always prided myself on getting away with things, you know. I would drive down Mooney Boulevard, and if the cops were after me, boy, I'd run. I was the guy I could have been a statistic. I could have been the guy doing 100-plus down Walnut Avenue, not looking where he's going, just trying to get away from the cops, you know. I thought that was a thrill, boy. I love that. I can remember having him follow me out of Visalia, going down Ben Maddox, and as soon as I hit the bridge by our old house, man, I'd stand on it, put it in third gear. By the time I got to the S curve, that cop would be over the bridge going, "Where'd they go?" You know, I thought that was neat. You know, I didn't have any care about anybody pulling out of their driveway or coming out of one of them side roads or anything like that. All I cared about was me and my fun, you know. And to be honest with you, I don't know how I lived through some of that, because there was some times when I did have to get off the road and I had to go through a couple fields and so on. But at any rate, so as time went on, I worked for this walnut outfit, and they're also farmers, so I actually worked for them all year round, and it was a good experience. There was a, you know, all the way up to that point, there was always a fellowship. I had some fellows that I liked that were my friends, and we drank, okay? So it was a fellowship, and I didn't like to drink alone yet, but I found myself, when I was working out there, and I think this is probably around 1984, 85, I found myself liking to get, I'd get a six-pack of Tall Boys, and I'd drive off before, I go cash my check, get a six-pack of Tall Boy Buds, and I think they were like 59 cents a piece or something, they were cheap. And pulling out new walnut orchards and sitting there and just pounding them things one after the other all by myself, you know, because I wanted to get my buzz on before I went home. And I remember doing that, and I didn't really remember to think or even think about that. That was a problem up until I got sober, you know, because people talk about, you know, you ever drink alone? And I thought, no. And then I did that Searching and Fearless Moral Inventory and found out that yes, I did do that, you know. And I did that a lot, and if I couldn't get beer, I'd get whiskey or something. There was times when I had to, if I had to go somewhere, like go to my family's for dinner or something, I had to catch a buzz first, and it usually entailed pulling off the road and getting drunk before I went there, you know. And one time, I remember a friend of mine who was a fellow drinker. One time he told me that nobody knew that I even drank until they seen me sober. You know, I'm sure a lot of us have heard that. So anyway, I started getting into trouble, like I said, with the law around those times. And I never blamed it on me. I always blamed it on the law or whoever it was I assaulted or who I got in a fight with or whose car I ran into or whatever. It was never my fault. It was always someone else's fault. I never owned anything. And if I got busted by the cops, well, I got caught. Next time I won't get caught, you know. It never dawned on me that if you didn't do them things, you wouldn't have to worry about getting caught, you know. And there was a time when I used to pride myself again on the fact that I couldn't drive my car down Mooney Boulevard 2 blocks without getting pulled over because cops just got tired of seeing me up and down Mooney Boulevard causing trouble. And they told me that too. And they would tell me, take my car and go home. Or before I kill somebody, and I just laugh in their face, you know, whatever. You know, lo and behold, did I know that today that they were trying to save my life, you know. Anyway, as time went on, I got married. And me and my wife were, boy, we were made for each other. We liked to fight like cats and dogs. We didn't have a set of matching dishes or coffee cups. And most of the time, the windows in the house were broke off. And I can remember getting to it with her and locking her out and her sticking her hand through the door, the window, and grabbing the doorknob, you know, cutting her hand all to pieces, you know. And, I mean, we used to really get with it like that. One night, I came home and I was drunk, and at this time she had stopped drinking for a while, but she did other forms of alcohol, and at any rate, she wanted to fight. And this woman was 6 feet tall, man. I mean, and I just told her, hey, I don't hit women, you know. I wasn't raised like that. And she kept hitting me in the face and hitting me in the face. And finally, I just went, wham! I hauled off and hit her. And I remember feeling that big when I did it, you know, because I knew that was wrong. That was the ultimate taboo in my life. And I did it. I just committed the ultimate taboo. And I remember just going and sitting down in a chair. And before I did, there was a mug sitting on the table, an A&W root beer mug. Next thing I know, I woke up, and I was laying on the floor, and she was over me, and my friend that I worked with was over here, and what happened? And they said, oh, we're glad you're not dead, you know. She clocked me with that mug, man. And I still got a lump on the back of my head about the size of my hat. You know, and so needless to say, after that day, if I ever got in a fight with a female, I turn and walk. I mean, I will not do it. There's no way. Because it's just, and that's another ism, you know, is because I learned in this program that today in my life, I don't have to worry about getting into a fight with a female. I don't have to worry about getting in a fight with anybody because I won't engage in it, you know. All that stuff is done. But back then, my theory was, man, I'm going to get you before you get me. So at any rate, so as time went on, I worked for these people off and on, and then my family had a transmission shop here in town, and I would work for my dad off and on through the 80s as long as we could get along, and we used to end up getting in fist fights, and then I'd do a burnout all the way down the road, and that was kind of a standing joke with the guy that had the shop next door. And at any rate, I never had a problem getting a job, but I always had a problem with getting a job that was healthy for me, because I worked for a lot of people off and on through the 80s and the 90s and in the early 90s, and the top requirement was, did they drink? And 90% of the time, that's how I got the job in the first place. I was a regular at Flintstones. I had a VIP card to get in that place when I was 17 years old. No cover charge, man. I still see some of the old bouncers floating around today, and they still remember me, you know. And they remember me as having to escort me out in the parking lot and making sure I drove all the way around the block and didn't come back. They remember a lot of things about me because I was a troublemaker. And I'm not going to sit here and say I was some kind of badass, because when I got in a fight, 90% of the time, it was a 50-50 deal, man. Either I got my ass kicked or I got lucky and got away before I got killed or something. Anyhow, after running around working for these different people off and on, I got a job at a tractor place. And actually, let me go back. Before that, my wife wanted me to do a program, and so did my family. So she told me that she was gonna leave me if I didn't quit drinking, and I needed to do this program and all this stuff. And it was after I came home after being gone for 3 days, and I told her, you know, I'm not doing nothing. And she said, well, if you don't, I'm gonna leave. You can't go to your mom and dad's anymore because they're gonna disown you, and the people that own this house are gonna kick you out, you know. And it happened to be the people that I worked for, and I just said, all right, fine, I'll go. So I went and I checked it out, and it was, I think it was Passages. It was back in the 80s at Cahuilla Delta. And I got a first taste of recovery there. There were some people in them rooms that I could identify with, and I didn't know them, you know? And I remember picking out who I wanted to be friends with. I remember comparing myself to the ones that, you know, okay, you don't drink quite enough for me to talk to you, but you, yeah, I can relate to you. You know, we could swap some stories, and I could, you know, we could have a pissing contest, and I'll win. I could probably beat him in a pissing contest, you know. And yeah, now she's a female. She got problems. But cause that's what I used to think, you know. But I started connecting, though, you know. I didn't like calling myself an alcoholic because I was the guy that was stuck here because I just like to drink a little too much beer, you know. I didn't have a problem, and they would say, yeah, well, have you been in trouble with the law, and have you been in trouble with your family? I said, yeah, but that's just, you know, I got a messed up family. That's just the way it goes, you know. So, you know, as usual, I could reason my way out of everything that I was being called because I wasn't those things. I can remember driving by Pine Recovery because the lady that ran it told me that the next step from there was to go to Pine Recovery. And I was like, Pine Recovery? What's that? And they told me, you know, well, it's a residential program for drunks. And I thought, ooh, that's scary. And I remember driving by there, and I seem to remember it was before the offices were in the front, you know, and you could look in the door. And I saw all these people standing out by the porch smoking cigarettes wearing these robes. And I thought, hell no, I ain't going there. So I went back, and I did this thing for 6 months. And it was a six-month program, and I lasted 3 months. And I remember I got tired of going to the meetings. And back then, the Alano Club was over on Santa Fe. And it was right catty-corner from our shop, and I still didn't like going there, you know. I got tired of listening to all the misery from all of you, you know. When does it get better, man? Who cares about, you know? When do we start talking about all the cool stuff we have now? Or, you know, when do we start swapping war stories about, you know, kicking so-and-so's butt or doing this or doing some illegal stuff, you know? When can we start talking about who we know out in the hood or stuff like that, you know? Because they weren't doing that, man. They were smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee and talking about this, you know, what a joy it was to be free. And I, man, free, I don't want to be free. I just want to be able to drink again like a normal person, you know. I was thinking this. So at any rate, in the meantime, I found my excuse. They took Passages and they turned it into what they called Impact. And what they did was they combined like three programs into one. And oh, man, more people. Oh, man, that was it for me. Boy, I was out of there. You know, you messed it up. You changed the program, and now I don't like it. And I remember the guy that was running it telling me that I wouldn't last 6 months out there without getting drunk. And he was wrong. Proved him wrong. It took about 4 years. I refused to drink. I quit. Because that guy dared me, I quit. So I didn't touch nothing. I didn't drink. I didn't use any other forms of alcohol. But I also didn't treat my isms, okay? I had problems with people all the time. I had a bad temper. My marriage never got better. It just got worse. My relationship with my family got worse. Anybody that wanted to tell me what they thought was going to get what I thought right back at them. And I can remember having fist fights with my brother, having fist fights with my dad. I mean, just going toe-to-toe with whoever wanted to confront me with what an a-hole I was, because that's what I was. I found another form that worked for my ism, and it was work. I started doing transmissions in my garage, and, man, it was great because now I had another following. I had all these people that liked me because I could work on their stuff, you know. So I did that for about 8 years in my garage. And I didn't drink except a couple times I fell off the wagon. And the two times that I fell off the wagon, one time I passed out in the middle. I was laying in the middle of the street, almost got hit by a car. And then the second time I did it, I fell off the wagon and me and my best friend burnt my truck to the ground down at the river. And we, it's a long story, but the end result was we'd end up running through Oak Ranch in our underwear, and I don't know how that happened, you know, but at any rate, it was not good, you know. But this other form that treated my ism, that worked my ism, worked good, you know, because I could go home, and I didn't have to deal with the old lady, because I could go right out in the garage and go to work. And my buddies would come over and hang out, and they'd drink beer, and we'd swap stories and tell lies, and I'd work on their stuff, make some money, you know, and I was pretty much almost giving away the work I was doing, you know. I was a really good transmission man, and I was doing it cheap. And I found out later on that I wasn't just doing it for the money. I was doing it for the fellowship of people that didn't want to be with their families either, you know. So anyway, in between all that, me and my wife got divorced. And my job, incidentally, I worked at New Holland for 9 years, and I worked my way all the way up to service manager. And they gave me, and in the meantime, I divorced my wife, and I got remarried to my new wife, and my new wife is enormous. She doesn't understand the obsession. She's a social drinker, man. And her family's pretty, you know, her dad's, I don't want to say he's an alcoholic, but when he drinks, bad stuff happens, so he don't drink. But he can do that. You know, I can't. But at any rate, so things are going pretty good for me, and I'm working at New Holland, and then they make me the service manager down there, and the manager, the man that runs the store that owns the business, he was an alcoholic. He loved to drink, and I mean, he could drink a 30-pack a day, man. And I've seen him do it. And the bottom line is, you know, I admired him because here's this successful man that can drink every day, and he owns the place. No one can tell him he can't do that. You know, he can go out and buy a 30-pack of beer at 10 o'clock in the morning, come back, and sit there in the back room and just plug away at his beer and go about and do his business. He was a functioning alcoholic. And in the meantime, while I was service manager there, I found myself, I was kind of thrown into the job, and I found myself just not, I just couldn't make it click, you know? So I thought, hey, I know what I'll do. I'll stay after work with this guy, and I'll have a beer with him, you know? Hey, I'm okay. I mean, I've been off the wagon for, shoot, almost, what, 13 years, you know? And with a couple of slip-ups, what's the big deal, you know? I'm not an alcoholic. So I started drinking again. I started drinking with this guy. After I started drinking with him, I figured out I didn't need that job anymore. So I quit, you know. And I found another job in Exeter. And at that job, that's what we did. And it was great because that was a job that I got from doing all my transmission work. So I started going there every night after work. And the excuse I used with my wife was, hey, man, I'm making money, you know. Oh, well, then, okay. And she goes, yeah, but you're drinking. I said, yeah, but everybody drinks. You know, and I'm cool with it. I'm not, you know, I'm not like everybody said I was, you know, because my family and my old friends would tell, don't let him drink. And well, I had her tricked, okay? She was on my side. I had problems because I was divorced, okay? And I was depressed, and I never dealt with all that stuff, and, you know, leave me alone and all that stuff. She was on board with that. So anyway, I started drinking again. As soon as I started drinking that beer, I remember, I'll never forget, I drank that one beer, and it was like that sound of the angels, ah, you know. Man, here we go, boy. I started telling Bert how to run the company, you know, and then he wouldn't do what I wanted to do, so I quit. And I went to work for this place in Exeter, and man, we would, I can name at least five times that we were work all day, start drinking that night, and then go, and then stay there all night, and the next morning just open the back the doors up, and like, you know, and act like we just got there when people would show up. We used to do that a lot. Well, then I started staying away from home for days at a time, and one time I stayed away from my home, which I'm married, I got a new kid, I got a new baby, I got a new kid and another one on the way, and I'm staying away from home for up to 8 days in a row. And I'm just telling my wife that, you know, I'm depressed, I can't come home. And Anyhow, finally, everything came to a head. Finally, what happened was I realized that it just wasn't working for me anymore. I was unhappy. I was miserable. I couldn't get that high I was looking for, man. I couldn't get drunk anymore. It just wouldn't do it, you know? And my fellows that were my fellows didn't want to drink with me anymore. So pretty soon the fellowship part was gone. Now I'm hanging out with people that are on a mission. That's all. Their goal is to get high, get drunk, get loaded. Get there and stay there. And that's where I was. And in the meantime, my family and my good friends decided to do an intervention on me, and they did. And they took my wife and kids, and my wife and kids went to Arizona, left the state. And stupid me, I didn't realize they were gone for 3 days. Finally, I came home and I looked around the house, you know, and I said, man, ain't nobody been here but me, you know. Well, that's when I started making some phone calls, and I started making some threats, and my threats were like, I weighed 140 pounds soaking wet. I pretty much dwindled everything I had away. I was on the verge of losing my house, and I didn't care. And that's where I was at that point in my life. And that was in June of 04. So on June 14th of 04, my friends came over, and they told me that the only way my wife is coming back and my kids are coming back is if I go into recovery. And then they had me talk to a woman that was in this program for a while, and she's gone now. Her name was Linda Burns. And she met me at Pine Recovery. And she walked me in there, and I remember helping her when she got clean, you know. I used to work on her car and stuff, not knowing that I was sick, not knowing that I was going to need her someday like that, not on that level. Because Linda was like my aunt, you know, and she was like the crazy aunt, you know. Yeah, okay, Linda, that's good, you're doing good. And here she is helping me, you know, at the most bottom point of my life. So I went into Pine, and I hated it, okay? I hated it. I didn't like any of the staff. I just hated it, okay? Because it was like they were putting me in a cage. And that's what I told them, too. I stayed there for seven... I detoxed in there for 7 days. I remember the fourth day of detox is when I found out that my wife wasn't even in this town. She was in Arizona. And I got a hold of a cell phone, and I was walking around the courtyard yelling on the cell phone, telling everybody to get the hell away from me, because if they didn't, I was going to do something. And I was telling her, threatening her on the phone that I was going to do this and I was going to do that, because in my head, I was still all that. Even though I had nothing left, I was still all that in my head. So anyway, finally, she told me to stay there for a month, and she'd come back. And that didn't do it, you know. But my best friend wrote me a letter. And he wrote me a letter saying that, you know, that he's been through this disease before, and that this time it stole his best friend, and he doesn't understand why. And I'll tell you something. That was my moment of clarity. That's when I sat down on the front of Pine Recovery on that bench, and I remember seeing that church. The only thing I remember is seeing that church steeple. And when I first got to Pine, I remember thinking there was people up in there watching me if I stay there. And now they're, you know, now everything's clear, and I've had some time to detox, and I decided that's when I surrendered, okay? And it was a little bit. It wasn't a lot, but I surrendered. So I started doing Pine's program, okay? In Pine's program, I clicked up with the coolest people in the house, and they had a cell phone, and I carried it around in my boot for 2 weeks, and I was smart. I took the battery out and put it in one and put the phone in the other, so, you know, it'd never go off like them idiots in the office, you know, beep, 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 hey, what's that, you know? So I made a bunch of new friends in there, and some of them were old friends from being out there. And I remember this one whiny guy that was on the roof sweeping the leaves off going, man, why do I have to do service hours, you know? And he was going on and on, and I remember the guy there telling him, well, it's because you didn't do your service hours, you know, and now you have to do double. And he's just whining and whining. I remember that guy, you know, and I thought, man, that guy just, you know what, I'd be glad when he's gone, you know, because, man, that guy just drives me up the wall. And guess what? He's my good friend today, and he's still in the program. He's probably one of the only ones left out of my house. That's right, Jay. And, but you know what? I'll tell you something. I learned something today that me and this man have a bond. We didn't have a bond back then. I didn't have a bond with anybody when I was there at first, you know? And anyhow, I went through 2 months, and my last month there is when I started getting it. I started realizing that I really wanted to be sober, okay? But I wasn't ready to do the program. But I was willing to be sober, so I was going to go to meetings and volunteer pine, and that's how I was going to stay sober, because I still didn't need AA. Well, I got out of the house, some things happened. My pump and my well quit. I was $27,000 in debt. My friend paid my house payment up to the point where we could start making payments again. Saved my house for me, my friend did. My family came back, and I had to go back to work at a job, which was New Holland, that I hated. And, because I hated it because my pride told me that I was much better than what they were paying me, and I was used to be the service manager here. How dare they make me, you know, just a regular old mechanic. But the one thing I hung on to when I was at New Holland was that it was principles before personality. Somebody in here told me that, and I clung to that because the principle of the matter was that I needed a paycheck. Never mind the personality that don't want to go there. So I did that. And I remember after the third month, man, where's my miracle? How come God's not smiling on me? How come things aren't clicking along? How come I went to make amends to my mother-in-law and I about killed her because she said, well, that's all fine and dandy, Jimmy, but man, let me tell you something. If CPS finds out that you ain't got running water at your house, they're going to come over and take your kids. And I said, well, what the hell's that all about? I just apologized to you, you know? Don't you get it? I'm making amends. And she says, no, she didn't get it. You know, all she got was, she threw some conditions out there for me. And I didn't like it. And I got mad. I almost blew the whole thing right there. I wanted to get drunk over it, you know. That's why when they tell you, man, you get in here and you do the steps in order, man. I didn't know that. I had to find out the hard way. So anyhow, my miracles ain't happening. Nothing's happening for me. So I got a sponsor. And it was a guy that I really liked his message. I liked his pitch. I felt like I could relate to him. And it worked. I did what he suggested. I started reading the book. And now I still have an AA book from the first program I went through back in 88. Never opened it, you know, but I had it. You know, I'm fine. This is my book. And, then I won one at the Friday night meeting, so now I had two books that I never opened, you know. So I got two AA books, and out of excuses, so I started reading. And I started doing what he suggested, and I remember Thanksgiving was right after. I got out of Pine in September, and that Thanksgiving I was, because we had to start doing the family thing. My wife insisted, we're going to my parents' house for Thanksgiving, and that's that, you know. And I'm like, well, what do you mean that's that? None of them apologized to me yet, you know. So, with the help of my sponsor, I learned to live and let live that day, and I got through it. And I also learned that they weren't as mad at me as I thought they were. That they actually loved me, and they wanted me to get better. So after that little dose of reality, I started doing the program rigorously. I started working them steps. I did a fourth step and a fifth step. And I made a list of my defects, and I prayed about it, man. God, remove my defects, man. Quit making, you know, I wish I would. I don't want to be selfish today. I don't want to be self-centered. I don't want to break the rules today. I don't want to offend anybody today. And it started working. And Lo and behold, that job that I hated that I went to every day, I finally had enough of their crap, because my crap had nothing to do with it, right? And I found out how to get another job. Instead of quitting and going and finding a job, I found a job and quit. I didn't know if you're supposed to do that, you know? So, at any rate, I remember I was mad and I didn't want to go there, and I went, you know, I used to pace my yard every morning not wanting to go to work. And through the program, I went to work because I had to, because of the principles of four personalities. So anyway, so what do you do when you're at a job you don't like, huh? You look for another one. And that's what I did. And I found a job that the city of Isalia was hiring. And they were hiring for the lead person. And I called my buddy and said, hey, what's the lead guy? You know, oh, that's a shop foreman. Oh, that's for me. You know, I'll get that, no problems. I'll just write me a resume and they'll see how cool I am and I know how to do all this stuff and they'll hire me right like that, man. There ain't a chance. There ain't no way I cannot get this. So after I got the letter saying I didn't get it, I wasn't devastated because because like I said, through the program and through working with my sponsor, I wasn't setting myself up for failure. If I didn't get it, I was going to try another place, okay? And I had already applied for other places. Well, I didn't get that job, but guess what? The suite manager for the city called me back up and said, hey, we have another opening. Would you be interested? And I said, sure. What, doing what? And they said, working in the tire shop. And my stupid brain said, you don't know nothing about tires. And besides, tires is for, you know, that's not a job. You're a journeyman mechanic, you know. So I said, well, instead of saying, no, I'm not interested, I said, how much does it pay? And it turns out it paid $3 more an hour than what I was making. Bam, I picked that up. And I went there with the understanding that this is a fresh start. And I am going to do the best that I can do with this job. Man, I'm going to go in there, and I don't care who I get along with or not. I'm just going to go in there. I'm going to try to get along with everybody. And my main focus is going to be on my work. And mind you, I still had $27,000 of debt hanging over my head. And it was like I was getting letters from the banks and, you know, your place is just one payment away from foreclosure. You know, it's like, I know. And I got bill collectors calling, you know. Pretty soon I didn't have a cell phone and we just didn't use it. I just unplugged the phone for a while because, you know, that's all they called, you know, with bill collectors and stuff. And I told Verizon that I died, and boy, they didn't like that. They came back at me 9 months later. But at any rate, you know, I mean, that's sick. But but the bottom line was, I asked God for a means to get me out of the mess that I created, okay? And I prayed about it, and I prayed about it. And, you know, I got this job, and it was being a tire man, and I knew how to do tires kind of, but not like on a general level. Boy, I went in there and bam, I mean, 2 weeks I was doing tires. And I found out after I got the job that I'm the only tire man for the whole city. You know, and I'm like, what? So my sponsor said, just go in there and do the best you can and God will take care of the rest. And he did. And you know what? The first time I was there a month, and they asked me, they said, hey, would you be interested in working some overtime? And I said, oh, sure, you know. And they said, all right, well, this week we need you to come in, work 7 to 7. And I'm like, wow, that's like three, four hours of overtime a day, right? Because my hours were that. 3.5 hours of overtime a day, I think. Or 2.5 to 3. Anyway, what it amounts to is 60 or 40 hours of overtime per paycheck. You know, and all I had to do was just get there 7 to 7, work 7 to 7. And I asked him, how long can I do this? And they said, and they laughed at me. They said, oh, you'll be tired of it in a month. They didn't know I had all that debt going on and that I was looking for means to pay it back the right way. So I did it for almost a year, man. At 11 months, they finally said, okay, no more. That's when they started cutting overtime back. But in that time, I paid my debt off, man. And I tell you what, I was so proud to go to my friend that bailed me out. And it wasn't a, hey, dude, I'm going to do better, I promise, you know. It was, thanks for bailing me out, I love you, and here's your money back, man. You know, I mean, I cannot tell you the release, the freedom, you know, that I was able to do that. And that was a big amends. And I started making my amends when I was ready, not before I was ready. Because I'll tell you guys something, man, if you start making amends and you're not ready for what comes back at you, you're going to get butthurt, man, guaranteed. If somebody tells you, fine, I get the heck out of my life and don't come back, you are going to get butthurt, because I did. You have to be ready to accept that. And if you can't accept that, then you're going to just gain another resentment. Well, I started making my amends. And some people told me, we'll see how you do. We'll see how it goes. Some people, one person out of all my friends told me that, eh, you know what? Man, that's kind of weird what you were doing. And, you know, kind of so long, you know, I got that cold shoulder. But that's okay. Because, you know, that's the way they can deal with our relationship, and I take full responsibility for screwing it up, you know. But let me tell you something. After a year of doing the program, my life got better. I went from having one vehicle that ran and worried about getting enough gas money to get to work and a meeting and home to having, you know, things just started clicking. Tags and insurance, man. The last 4 years of my run, tags and insurance was last on my list. You know, if I got money left over, maybe. You know, and I was the guy that put the dirt over the tag so you can't see it. You know, had the dirty old truck, made sure there was hydraulic oil coming off the back of it. You know, and had the dirt with the shovel on there so you could barely read the plate, let alone see if the tag's expired. And that worked. So I thought. But anyway, as time went on, something happened to me. Me and my sponsor got to be really good friends, and we still are today. The problem I had with that was that knowing that he's my friend and knowing that he didn't want to hurt my feelings, I would bounce things off of him, and I would twist the way I would present it so that I would get the answer out of him that I wanted. In other words, I was manipulating him to co-sign what I felt, okay? Instead of telling me that it was wrong and, hey, you know what, you know, that's not going to work out. And what happened was, and this is about a year and a half ago, is my life just started not clicking anymore, man. I was having trouble at work. I was having trouble with my family. I was having trouble with my friends. I was having trouble with my friends. All of a sudden, you know, why can't they do this? Why can't they do that? You know, don't they understand about me, you know? And finally, somebody made a suggestion one night after a meeting. They said, hey, maybe you need to go get another sponsor. And, wow. And they pointed me to somebody right there. And without thinking and analyzing why I shouldn't, I got him. And the only thing I have in common with this man is we're alcoholics. And I see him every week at the meeting. And he took me through the steps again. And I did another 4 step. And I had a lot more. I had resentments. Not only did I have new resentments, I had resentments that I took back. Did you know you can do that? You can forgive your mom. And then if she does something that ticks you off, well, then all of a sudden, you just take back the resentment. Not only do you gain another one, but you take back the one that you forgave her for, and you start hammering her for it again, you know? Well, you know what? When I was 4, you know, you start doing that. I started doing that. And that's scary. The program don't work if you do that. It doesn't say anywhere in the book about, you know, you can, you know, you make a list of people you have harmed and become willing to make amends to them all, except when they, you know, it doesn't say that. So anyway, he took me through the steps. I started applying the principles into my life again, more rigorously than I did before. And guess what? My life got better. Things started clicking again. And today I have my sponsor. He's been my sponsor for a year and a half. I still have my old sponsors, my good friends, in the program. I have a lot of new friends that I've met in this program, and I mean, I love them with all my heart. I mean, they're real. They're not, they didn't come here tonight because I'm going to fix their transmission for them this weekend, or I might work on their car for free, or I got a bunch of, I got a good place to go drink in, or they're here because they're my friends, man. And they're my friends because they got to know me first. They got to know who I really am. They know that I can, they know that I can out there, that I'm a chicken shit, and that I can, you know, that I'm scared, and that I have fears, and I'm not Mr. Macho Man, I'm not all tough or anything like that. And I like that. I would rather do that than be that facade that I was 20 years ago. Today I sponsor people. I sponsor a lot of people. I give it back. I do the best I can when I sponsor them. I believe that I need to be at Pine, and I need to help people at Pine because I need to remember what it was like for me. Because I will never forget, the day that I surrendered. The day that I accepted Jesus Christ into my life was July 17th of 2007, but the day that I surrendered to God was June 16th, 2004. My sober date is June 21, 2004, and that's because that's the day that with a clear mind, I decided to start the program. Anyway, that's all I have. I can't think of any more. Thanks for letting me speak, and one thing I want to leave with is half measures avail us nothing, okay? And that's the truth. If you do this program half-assed, you're going to get a half-assed program. You're going to stay half-assed sober, and you're going to half-assed deal with your problems. And the half that you don't deal with will come back and bite you. You have my word on that. Anyway, thank you.